Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 26, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week this week of releases like Chia that we've played a good bit about. We've got Storyteller, the Diablo 4 open beta, a bunch of stuff going on this weekend here. And we've got a bunch of news as well, as we've got some surprising announcements of things. We've got one game getting an upgraded version that I don't think anybody ever expected or really needed, but we'll tell you about that. We got some games being delisted and one getting reversed on that decision because they decided that it really was stupid to do it. And we got a bunch of other stuff happening here, so we'll get to that. But before we do, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some of that Diablo 4 open beta, which is pretty solid. It is very much Diablo, especially like the console version of Diablo 3 in a lot of ways. So it controls pretty well. Maybe the main change that they have made for Diablo 4 is that you no longer are able to do like an infinite dodge roll with the right stick. They have made that like a cooldown thing on the circle button, I think it is. I think it's locked to that button. You use it once and you have to wait like 5 seconds. I don't know that I ever used it that much as like a dodge in Diablo 3, because it was kind of just a fun thing to have when you're moving around, but more, you know, you knew if you could take damage and just try to stay out of the range of other characters, depending on what sort of build you had for that. But this kind of has the early opening hours of the game. Like you get to a point where it opens up, and that's where all the other people show up, where, like the live service-y kind of stuff shows up for that, where you get to your first big town that you can kind of explore and do a bunch of stuff in, which is a lot of the same stuff that was in Diablo 3. You know, you can go to, you know, people to sell your shit. You can salvage it to the blacksmith, which preserves all the cosmetics so that you can just give any item of the same kind that look if you want to, whether it's, you know, armor stuff or weapons, all that kind of stuff. I guess where you can meet up with other people, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, like the early parts of the game, it's very much them going all in on the dark stuff.
Yeah.
That people were mad at that Diablo 3 wasn't showing a ton of that early on. They said it looked like, you know, a colorful game, which it did not. But, you know, this is a more dark game, especially the early, the beginning cutscene, actually. We see these dudes, you know, trying to get these gold that's supposedly in this tomb, and end up getting, you know, wrapped into this whole scheme to bring back Lilith, one of the main Diablo bosses. I don't know if she was one of the late game bosses in Diablo 3. I forget where she was at. She's pushed as the big boss here with the way that they're doing the story stuff, but, you know, story stuff has always been, you know, not an important thing in Diablo games. Though here they're doing a lot more, you know, long cutscenes, I guess, in a way that I'm sort of like, no thanks. Though I would probably, you know, watch them the first time I play through it and then just, you know, skip it every other time I can. But it has a lot of the same kind of stuff. You know, you're going around, you know, exploring these areas. You can find some side things to do, that kind of stuff. But it's all Diablo 4. It seems pretty solid. I don't know that I will purchase it at launch. I might wait. You know, I'm going to assume that that acquisition goes through and they'll just put it on Game Pass. So why spend the money on it right now, especially since I don't really want to buy anything Activision Blizzard. Support all their bullshit that's still going on.
Yeah.
I've seen people asking about that as like a, oh, can I officially buy, you know, a Activision Blizzard game and stop boycotting them. And it's like, they haven't really changed much of anything.
Nope.
They're just basically like, give us all that money, Microsoft, and you can do whatever you want and keep the same people or whatever. Who cares? But yeah, that's Diablo 4. Mm-hmm. It's over, I think, tonight sometime. I haven't had any real interest in going back now. I just kind of want to play more Diablo 3 instead. Mm-hmm. But the classes they have are some pretty solid ones, like Necromancer's in there, so it's not like a late DLC class like Diablo 3 was. Mm-hmm. Crusader's not in there, but otherwise they do have a pretty good character creator, which is good because there wasn't one in Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like, do you want the male or female version of this character for a class? You didn't really have much customization, though. Obviously, you're going to get lots of cosmetic loot to cover them up. So, you know, all the like tattoos and marks and such you put on them, it's probably not going to show up very long.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. That's the nice thing they do have is it was probably in the original. It was like mark stuff is junk, so mm-hmm. you can easily sell it in shops and such. So yeah, there you go for that. Another game that came out this week, Storyteller. This is on Switch and PC only. It is a narrative puzzle game, more so in the sense that you're sort of going through a storybook, and each of the pages that you open up presents you with a title that tells you, everyone's like, oh, this person finds love. And then you can set a backdrop, and then you have characters that you can put into those scenes. In the, whatever the amount of scenes you have, which I think 6 is the most I've seen so far. You have like a wedding backdrop, so you can put the two characters there, and that intimates that they are in love. Mm-hmm. And then the next page might say like, oh, this person breaks, gets a broken heart. And so you have like the other characters get married. Then that character, professes their love, but finds out, their heart is for another person, that kind of thing. It's a lot of like figuring out the ways you're putting these different backdrops and characters in them to satisfy the requirements of the titles, which isn't too complicated. I think it's 13 chapters, usually like 4 or 5 scenes for each one. I've put maybe about an hour or so in it, and I'm maybe about halfway through, so probably not too long. But there are some of the scenes have alternate solutions that'll pop up once you finish one of them.
Yeah.
So then that is some extra stuff there. And I've had a couple that I haven't been able to figure out because they don't necessarily explain the mechanics of what the way some of these scenes can be used. So you're kind of left to figure it out or, look it up, whatever works for you. But yeah, that's pretty cool. It's $15. I guess 10% off on sale. So you can get it for a little bit cheaper for those, but it's a nice little short game if you want one of those. Let's see. Also been playing more Theater Rhythm that I've been working on finishing up all the series quests. I'm at 80% right now. Still have a number of them that are tough to complete right now, especially a couple of them that want me to complete it on either the highest difficulty or the second highest difficulty for the songs that are really fucking me up in a way that I'll have to just practice a bunch on them.
Mm-hmm.
Where you just kind of really want you to do multiple things at once in a way that, the easier difficulties do not prepare you for at all. Trying to do the practice stuff doesn't really help so much. Trying to figure out maybe using specific abilities that, can negate missed notes and that kind of stuff. Or the ability to, keep you from dying when you take the last hit that would kill you. That kind of stuff. But still working my way through that. And then Ape Academy 2 is one of the new PS Plus premium games. It's a PSP game that came out back in the day when they were making a bunch of spin-off Ape Escape games. And this is one that just never came out over here. It did come out in the EU, so it's they've got English versions on there. And this is a card battling game, but it's got a bit of a weird hook to it. So the it's a card system, but also mixed with rock, paper, scissors, as you have, you know, a power number on, or it's more of a cost number on it for the amount of bananas you can use. And it's a system kind of similar to what, you know, a lot of card battlers use, where you kind of start off with X amount of a mana currency type of thing. And it grows with each turn. Here you have to pass to increase your number. And so I've been starting at like 4. But if I don't have any cards that are below 4, then I have to pass, once a decision is made and with the cards, whether it's sort of if it's the same, you know, rock, paper, scissors move, you have a draw, but then you go, if you have a draw, then you pick another card for whatever's next. So you get those two essentially get disqualified. You pick another card out of your hand. And whether you win or lose, you play a mini game, a real quick mini game that then decides whether the person that's losing takes the effect of what you would get out of that card, or if they, you know, negate it, that kind of thing. So it's a very weird card game, but it's kind of neat, and I've been playing a bit of it. So that's kind of a weird game that's, you know, kind of fits more into the way gaming is today, where there's tons of these card battling games. And it has a unique hook to it in that way, especially on consoles. So maybe it'll gain a smallish audience to it. But yeah, it's a neat little weird thing that PS Plus Premium people can get access to. You might be able to buy it separately, but I would say at least check it out on Premium if you have it. Mm. But that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, I have finished Trails to Azure, which... you know, that I loved that game. It was very entertaining. And the thing is, like I said, and I already said this a million times before, but I'll say it once again. If you've played the Cold Steel games, you know how the story already ends. It ends with, Crossbell losing its independence, getting invaded and, getting invaded and absorbed into the Erebonian Empire, and all this stuff. What I did not know was the enormous twist that this game throws at you at like the 11th hour, because it turns out the guy that has been directing and organizing and getting this whole scheme together is literally the last person you would expect. He hides in plain sight the entire time. He's always there. You're talking with him numerous times. And then it turns out that he's more or less like the big bad of the game. And that absolutely threw me for a loop. And I mean, anybody who's played Trails in the Sky, any of the Trails games in general, knows that this series is really good at having their like ultimate villains just sort of hiding there, you know, without you ever realizing that they're the ones responsible for all of it. But yeah, it essentially, you know, the story winds up and, you know, it's really good. And of course, like, it literally ends on an image of, you know, the Orcus Tower draped with Imperial banners and a couple of Imperial soldiers standing guard out front of it. So, and honestly, I got to think, for Falcom, it was really ballsy for them to then take the story over to Erebonia. Because that is not in hindsight, that would be like the last place you thought they would take that story arc to, but that is where it ends up. So, you know, the next series, you know, we got Trails of Reverie, which is coming in, at least over here, I think it's in June. June or July, one of those, a couple months from now.
Mid-July.
Yeah, July, yeah. You know, we're finally going into the Republic of Calvard, which is, man, it is going to be interesting to see that, because one of the things that that happens a lot, especially in Trails to Azure, is it talks a lot about how, it brings it up more than once. Supposedly, the revolution that brought the democracy to Calvard was apparently extremely bloody, and, you know, they claim, like, you know, the act, you know, the crimes of the revolutionaries could fill a laundry list. But I've also been kind of researching, you know, with the next couple of games in the Trails series, and it talks a lot, you know, like sort of like the people who were behind the revolution and everything. And it doesn't really seem like that. I mean, there is one guy in the group of the revolutionaries that goes like all Robespierre and starts, you know, killing a bunch of people in the little settlement he rules over. But I don't know. There might be more to it when the games come over here. But other than that, I'm also playing another game that I can't really talk about right now because the embargo doesn't end until the end of next week. But all I can say is it looks good. It's really detailed. Almost to a fault, and I'll explain why when I finally get the chance. But yeah, so Dan Reb, what about you?
Just real quick, Brandon, you were talking about like this guy in the shadows. I typed the name in the chat with asterisks to avoid spoilers. Is that the guy you were talking about?
Yep.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, he's there the whole time, and it just never dawns on you that he might be the guy responsible for it.
Exactly. But yeah. Glad you enjoyed it. I don't think any part of Trails into Reverie takes place in Calvard. I think this is just a game that meshes three story points and like actually closes the loops in Crossbell and area. So either way, that's good stuff.
A fact that the next Trail series definitely does.
The Kuro no Kuseki or something definitely takes place in Crossbell. Or not Crossbell, but Calvard. And
Calvard, yeah.
So, yeah, looking forward to that one. That's going to come out soon. Anyway, as for what I've been playing, I got a code for WWE 2K23. So thanks to 2K for that. And it's much of the same from last year's game. And if you remember what I talked about, like WWE 2K22 was sort of a reinvention of the series, particularly because 2K21 was just so bad and unplayable from day one. And 2K23 really took the engine apart and remade it again. And while I don't think it's anywhere near as fun as the N64 games, it is a whole lot more approachable. But my main thing is that with the games, it's just hard to really simulate, you know, the real back and forth of a professional wrestling match. And with how easy/hard it is to perform certain counters, it just feels a little off. But at the same time, like, you know, again, it's WWE 2K. As far as the presentation, they've got it. As for what they're missing, like, I wish they had Pat McAfee in the game as a commentator because he's been killing it on SmackDown ever since he made his debut. And it's unfortunate that he's not in it. But as for people that are in the game, there's all sorts of cool superstars here. I mean, you have Cody Rhodes, who obviously came from AEW during the last WrestleMania. You're also seeing the bloodline versions of Roman Reigns, the Usos, Paul Heyman, and Sami Zayn. And like, if anybody is following professional wrestling right now, like, they know how huge Sami Zayn is. Unfortunately, like, he's still a heel in the game. However, they gave him all of the gear that he's currently wearing as he's getting ready for a tag team matchup against the Usos for WrestleMania next week, which I will be at, so I will not be here. But anyway, like I said, it's much of the same compared to last year's game. Instead of focusing on Rey Mysterio, the cover athlete this time is John Cena. As we know, John Cena is pretty much bled WWE. He didn't really do much in the independent circuit. He was just pretty much in WWE's developmental territory, and then eventually became the superstar that he is. The main difference between the John Cena spotlight compared to the Rey Mysterio one is that when you were using Rey Mysterio in last year's game, in this year's game, you're actually going against John Cena in every single match. So So the first one is actually him retelling the tale of what happened at ECW One Night Stand, where John Cena defended the WWE Championship against Rob Van Dam in front of a hostile ECW crowd. And yeah, it was just awesome reliving these matches. So as we did in the last in last year's game, it's like while the object is to win every match, you do have to, or you know, you don't really have to, but you are recommended to follow certain objectives. And as you perform these objectives, you actually see them happen in real time. So the way that the game really features both actual WWE footage compared to what they are in the game is like pretty seamless, and I'm glad they went on with that. Aside from that, I didn't really play much. I did play some couch competitive with my brother, and I did notice that the UI is a little wonky. I had trouble switching up match types. Like, I was trying to get into a Hell in a Cell match, but for some reason it kept going back to one-on-one matches. And it's because the settings keep changing after every single change that you make. So, like, before you start a match, you have to make sure that all the settings are correct before you actually start. And it's really easy to, like, turn off things like the entrances and things like that. And, you know, the entrances are actually a huge part of wrestling, so that's unfortunate that they couldn't get that right. I'm sure it'll all be patched out, but, like, those are my minor complaints for now, and I'm sure it'll be better as the weeks go on, especially as we're going into WrestleMania next week. But, yeah, that's been that. The other big game that I've spent most of my time on this week is Chia. This game is out on PlayStation Plus Extra and above. And, this is a game that I've really been looking forward to ever since it was announced since the first PS5 event. And, this is an indie title. And when it was first shown, it drew a lot of comparisons to Zelda Breath of the Wild and, like, Wind Waker just because of just the way it looks. It doesn't really have necessarily a cel-shaded or toon-shaded design, but the art style is very cartoony in its own right. And I also made comparisons to Moana, as for like just a lot of it taking place on a beach exteriors and whatnot. It's supposed to be inspired by New Caledonia, and everything here though is like fake. Like there's no real language being spoken and stuff like that. And I actually kind of found that a little off-putting, primarily because during a lot of the pivotal story moments, you're actually playing music. And the music is similar to the Last of Us Part II's guitar, except you're using a ukulele. And a lot of the rhythmic stuff is comparable to that of The Last of Us. And yeah, like I said, there's a lot of musical scenes, but then like you're sort of distracted by the music versus the plot. And while you don't have to play all the music, in fact, it's optional, you can even just read. I don't know. Like, to me, it just makes everything more interactive, so I'd rather play it. But at the same time, like, I wish I kind of understood what was going on. So the plot was rather surprising for me. You play a girl, and all of a sudden, like, she has these powers, and she all of a sudden has her father kidnapped by these strange people with airships. And you basically just go from island to island and, like, give all these elders, like, some items so that they can give you more stuff to move forward. It's very basic in that regard, not something that I really expected. And but on a positive note, I'm finding it really fun to explore the world of Chia. During the first few hours, I was a little, like, overwhelmed because it gives you a lot of stuff at once, despite the fact that it tries to piece it up rather nicely with their pacing. But it was just like hard to really understand there. But like once you really start playing with the nuances, like for example, one of the coolest things you can do is you can just take control of things like inanimate objects or even animals. So for example, if you want to get from one point of the island to another point of the island, it's really, really far. If you take control of a bird, you can easily just, you know, traverse the island that way. So I'm about a little more than 10 hours into the game. How long to beat says it takes around 7 if you're just straight lining. But I've been like getting all these little tricks as I make my way through the game. It's sort of like, you know, Breath of the Wild in regards to being distracted by the open world. And while the open world is like a little bit on the boring side, I'm still having a good time just upgrading my abilities so I can I can climb more. I can use my my parachute thing a little more. And yeah, as far as exploration, it's definitely on the fun side there. I just really am not too enamored by the plot, and I think I'm at a point where I want to just go ahead and finish it sometime soon, because I think I've seen pretty much what this game has to offer so far. But yeah, I know Chris is playing it too, so what do you think?
Yeah, I've been enjoying it a lot. It feels like definitely like a chill Breath of the Wild, where you kind of just explore the two islands, or yeah, it's mainly like two islands with a little bit of smaller stuff in between there throughout the world. But I do like a lot of what it is doing here. You know, there's no real combat. Like, the closest thing you get to combat are these little camps that the like minions of the bad guy are hanging out at. But like the extent of the combat there is that you are, you know, trying to blow up those creatures. That's no real combat on your own. And you have plenty of ways of just getting away from them, even when you do get spotted.
Yeah, I mean, like, in this game, it's really hard to die. In fact, I mean, you don't really die. You just, like, respawn in the nearest campfire. And the funny thing with the little combat scenes you mentioned is that when you first start the game, it's normally just three enemies and then, like, some sort of tapestry to burn. And when you use that ability that I talked about in regards to, like, controlling other things, you can also take control of the campfire, so you can become a burning log and just be able to clear them all that way. But as you get further into the game, these camps all of a sudden become huge outposts where instead of three guys, you're dealing with like 34 of them, and you're dealing with like other things that are more dangerous to you. So that's one thing you look forward to later.
Yeah. But I do like that it just kind of throws a bunch of stuff on the map and lets you kind of just go at it at your own pace. I've been sort of kind of a little bit confused as to like how long it is as far as like how many chapters, because, you know, even getting like to the point where you are set free, you're like two chapters in. And I'm just like, wait, what? There's already two chapters. It's, I don't know if they're just being very free form and just designating these like chapters, because you do like one quest and you might, you know, move to the next chapter kind of thing, even if it doesn't seem like it's a significant thing. Because once you get, you know, out of the intro stuff and you're kind of set free, you know, I basically did like two of the main quests, which give you some new abilities and that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, it's chapter four now. I was like, oh shit. Okay. I was expecting that. But yeah, like I was almost at some points kind of wanting to just stop and work on the collectible stuff. Because, yeah, I initially did some of the shooting gallery stuff, which gets you trophies, which are actual physical trophies in your inventory, which I was sort of confused by that. But I eventually figured out, like, oh, you can use these in they have actual crane game machines that do that, which are very annoying. Because all it is basically a crane with these balls in them that you're trying to pick up, and even with the like laser guiding it has on it to tell you like where you're aiming at, it's pretty easy for it to just be like, oh, sorry, you just slightly missed that one. You know, go ahead and try again. I don't know if you do the same things over and over again, if you still get trophies, even if you don't get higher trophy rankings on them or whatever. But
yeah, I've never even tried the crane game. I didn't know. I mean, I knew it was a thing, but I didn't know if it was important. Because I had no idea what trophies were even for. Like, you can gain like six trophies in your inventory, but I had no idea what they were doing. So I just like get them all out, because it's actually more useful to have items that burn in your inventory. Because again, that's your main method of combat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something you can use for that, but also like your first big quest. It's like, oh, you got to get these things, and one of them's a trophy. I'm like, ah, shit, I just spent them. So I had to go explore and find where the other ones are. But it has a lot of interesting, like, traversal options. Like you said, you can inhabit different creatures. Like, I got to the one like swampy area and took over a gecko, and that thing was moving pretty good for this little lizard dude. And that was pretty fun. Getting to like fish and dolphins and dugongs and that kind of stuff that are pretty fun. But they also have like, if you get on top of trees, you can swing those around to like launch yourself off. There's a lot of cool traversal things to get around with. And then you can also just fast travel. And I think it also has options for like, just get me to the next like story mission. I don't care about, you know, exploring this world.
Yeah, fast travel, at least for me, has been a little annoying because the only way to actually fast travel is to look for the anchors, which are on docks around the world. And there's only like six of them. So there's not a whole lot of.
But yeah, there's also, you have a little boat that you can ride around with. And, you know, you can even set it to, you know, move quickly and just stop controlling it and just hang out and do stuff. So it's not even a major thing that you have to control. It's not like an involved thing like Sea of Thieves, that kind of stuff. But also, you know, you can get to a new dock and just spawn it there. So you don't even have to like keep track of it or anything. Mm-hmm. They make it pretty easy to kind of get around. But yeah, like one of my favorite just dumb gameplay things is the way you push things around. Because when you hover over something you can pick up, you know, it shows you the name and you can just pick it up and, you know, either store it or throw it, which I initially, like in that first island, I figured that out with a dog. Like, oh, I can pick up this dog, and I just threw it into the lake. Good job. Fuck that dog. You know, that kind of thing. Then I did it with a cat, and I was like, okay, this game's got some fun little hooks to it for that kind of stuff. But yeah, then you can start inhabiting things, and even the way you launch out of that stuff when you move around is pretty cool. If there's an annoying thing, it's moving down steep, you know, inclines, and I hit like a magic whoopsie point that it just warps me away. It's like, you were going too fast or something, or you got into a place you shouldn't have been. We've warped you back to the last, you know, fireplace that you were at, or, you know, dock or whatever. And I was like, that's pretty annoying. Especially because I don't think I was in any place that was bad with it. But yeah, like a lot of the cool stuff you have, you know, you got your slingshot that's pretty well done, and they have options to use the gyro for that. So you can have it aim pretty well. What else? You have your stamina for your little glider, which isn't super great, but that's why you have the soul junk, because that stuff doesn't use your stamina at all. But you do have to worry about some of the collectibles are, you know, underwater, like the pearls and such. And I've run into a few areas where those are pretty far down, where either I couldn't figure out where they were at or I didn't have enough stamina to swim down. But if I had, you know, fish around, I could probably find it there. And I believe it resets your stamina when you come out of inhabiting, you know, another creature. So there are multiple ways of getting around that. And even then, it's not like Breath of the Wild where, you know, you get into water if you're using your stamina while you're swimming. You don't use stamina while you're swimming here. So you don't have any, you know, situations where, oops, I was in the water and I didn't have enough stamina to climb out of it, so now I'm just going to drown. That kind of stuff is pretty hard to die in those kind of situations that Breath of the Wild would absolutely punish you for. So yeah, I would definitely say this is a much more approachable game than even Breath of the Wild was, because it definitely doesn't punish you in a lot of ways that game would, and especially not having to be so focused on combat. It's pretty approachable for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, like, that would be the main thing I would say about Chia. Like, if you're looking for an open-world game, which I didn't even think this would be, I thought it would just be, like, some sort of straight-up plot thing. If you're looking for an open-world game that's cozy, this is definitely up your alley. Like, again, there isn't a whole lot of combat. There aren't really a whole lot of ways to die. And, like, it rewards you with exploration. A lot of the items you find are going to be a little bit on the boring side. But at the end of the day, if you appreciate good art, if you appreciate, like, nice music, and you want to see the way that the developers put in their interpretation of New Caledonia, This is definitely something nice to play. And then, like I said, like from what I read from How Long to Beat, the game takes around like 7 hours to beat. But if you want to do everything and everything, like if you want to platinum the game, it should be over 20 hours. There's a whole lot of stuff to the open world. Again,
yeah,
a little bit on the barren side, but if you're looking for just, you know, something just chill to play, this is it.
Yeah, and I do like it. It doesn't have much map barf on it. You have to go and find points of interest to even fill up stuff on there, because it'll throw things that you've seen, which, you know, if you're picking up, you know, all the little braided things around, or, you know, your pearls or whatever, you'll take that stuff off the map so it doesn't even keep it on there, which may be a little tough if you're, you know, down to the last couple of things. You maybe need a map to try to figure out where that is, because some of them can be, like I said, some of the pearls and such that are underwater can be a little tricky. Because I found like a container ship that was sunken, and that was like, oh, I don't, these things are pretty well hidden in there that I don't know what I'm looking for, whether they're, you know, above ground or below ground or whatever, or above water, below water, that kind of stuff. But yeah, the world is really cool.
The map is far from my favorite thing, though, and I'm seeing that really be sort of a common thing with a lot of the indie open world games. Like it was a problem with what was that game that it was also an open world indie? I forgot. Kena: Bridge of Spirits. Like I thought the map left a lot to be desired there. And in this game, like you could never really tell where you are unless you interact with a sign, and then the sign will show you your last location. But aside from that, if you want to like plot certain points on the map using a thumbtack, and then all of a sudden you find the item you see, and then all of a sudden like that item that you're plotting is gone, like that would be your way of traversal here. The main thing that I'm struggling with, as I mentioned from before, is the little outposts where you find like the enemies, because like I said, like there's a point where I'm ringing my objective right now where I have to like burn 34 soldiers and like take photos of like certain parts of the level that I'm in, and it doesn't actually tell you where they are even when you zoom in. And aside from that, when you're just exploring the world in general, in order to like really plot the map, you have to go to the high points, kind of like what you did in Assassin's Creed to like, you know, show more of the map. It's the same idea here. And like, yeah, like if there's anything that, in my opinion, the game does bad, it's the map.
Yeah. Though I do like it the way it is, hands off. It doesn't necessarily like force you to have to rely on so much, though I'd like to have at least like the compass on the screen at all times. Because it does have like a cool thing where you can pull up a little mini version of the map. But, you know, and you can even say like, hey, where the fuck am I? And it can like give you a little bit of an idea of what area you're in, probably. But yeah, if you don't have any points of interest on that map, you can struggle a little bit to try and figure out, but you can also, it's not a complicated map. It's not like, you know, an Assassin's Creed map or anything. So you can probably figure out pretty easily that, okay, I'm on a shoreline. There's a thing over here. I'm probably over here. You know, you can probably take a couple of things you can see and figure out like where you're at pretty easily, as well as just look for, you know, some shiny thing in the distance. Be like, okay, I'm going to go over there and see where that is on the map, and that'll tell me where I'm at just in case. But I would like a way to keep that compass on the map, because it's in the same spot that the mini map is, and it would definitely be useful, especially if you're just trying to follow, you know, the pinpoint for the specific collectibles you're going after. It can pretty easily get pulled off of there as you're looking around and trying to figure out like, doing things, and I think it can bump you out of that mode. But the game does a good job with accessibility stuff to make it pretty easy to get it working the way you want it to.
The UI is definitely a little finicky, because like you, I also like to have the compass there at the bottom right, and then sometimes when I pull it up or even look at the map, like the cursor gets lost every now and then, and you have to just zoom out to see where it is. Yeah, again, it's just these little things that like typically lack polish when they're in indie, and you know, you wish like they could have done more in that regard, but like I said, it works. So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a lot of cool stuff too. It's like the journal's pretty well done. It'll literally explain to you what happened in each chapter of the story. So if you're like, wait, that was the whole chapter? What happened exactly? You know, if you take a break or whatever, it'll explain all that. It can go through all like the characters, like, this is what this character is, and you're not 100% sure like what the main bad guy is. It'll explain that. And all these different characters, and even as they start to explain some of the backstory stuff, you're like, oh, okay, there's this whole thing that happened, and you're one of the kids involved with this, so that's cool, you know, that kind of stuff. As well as for all of the like side stuff and the abilities, it can explain that stuff pretty well, and you can, there's even like a trick system for when you're falling out of the sky, that kind of stuff, and it's full of a lot of stuff. It does everything pretty well, a few things really well, and some things are a little bit clunky that I'm sure they'll probably adjust it here as they do some updates. But it's very much, I would put it in the vein of like a Just Cause, in that there's a campaign you can go through, but you know, a lot of the fun is exploring the world and getting the collectibles. It's maybe there's a little too much of that, but it does a good job of like facilitating you just exploring the world and making that really fun, versus, you know, having to be just, you know, a normal video game and have you constantly doing other stuff, combat and all that kind of stuff. And I do like the way that they kind of fill in this culture of this world, because they do talk about it right up front when you start, like, oh yeah, just in case you're wondering, this world is based on New Caledonia. Here's where it is, in case you don't know where the island is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right off the coast of New Zealand and Australia. So it's a Pacific Island nation. And they talk about, like, yeah, we've put a lot of the culture of our homeland into this game. You know, the music, the instrument stuff that you do. Because you're not just playing the ukulele. There's different points where you're playing different things. So it kind of fills all that in. I do kind of wish there were difficulties on that music, because the sections can be really brutal up front.
Yeah, it's getting really hard out of nowhere.
Yeah, they'll just be like, all right, you've hit these notes like every second pretty well. What if we start throwing them all over the place like it's Guitar Man? Mm. And it's like, no, how about we don't do that? How would you let me play on baby mode for that? And then if people want to play on Guitar Man mode, then that's cool. But yeah, also they have the ukulele is the ocarina from the Legend of Zelda games. So, you know, you can use it for different abilities and such. And so I can be like, yo, what if I just have a dog hang out with me? Like, that's cool. You know, or a bird, or, you know, some of the other stuff that's going on. You can just change the time of day, which I'm sure there's some reason to do that. But I don't really do that. But I do like the way they have the, they don't really use them for notes. They make them all names. I was looking at it, it's like the notes for dog is D-A-A-G, dog. Mm-hmm. You know, bird is bad. You know, attract animals is feed, because, you know, like you feed animals to attract them, that kind of stuff. It's pretty fun in that way, instead of notes, really. Just like, oh, there's, you know, the notes of an instrument are the, you know, the first few letters of the alphabet, so why don't we just have fun with that, make that a whole thing. But yeah, it's a game that is going to be one that people really like. It might be this year's Stray. Mm. As far as a game that, you know, people don't know anything about going in, other than like maybe one thing about it. Mm-hmm. And we'll be surprised by what else is in there and all that. It doesn't necessarily feature a cat, but there are cats and you can be a cat in it. So it's almost there for that, but yeah, it's a game that rewards you very much for exploring and doing a little bit of everything at least. And yeah, I think that is something that's going to make it a very enjoyable game for people. So yeah, like that's it for me on this game. I'm looking forward to put more time into it and hopefully beat it at some point. But if not, you know, whatever, it's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have anything else to add, Danrib.
No, that was pretty much it. I don't know how much this game actually costs if you don't have PS Plus Extra.
I want to say it's either $30, something like that.
30 is probably on the borderline of what I would spend for this. It was like 25, I definitely grab it.
Yeah, $29.99.
Yeah.
But if you have it on PS Plus and you want to give them a little money beyond just buying it, they have a thing full of cosmetics, which has, I'm looking at it right now, Sifu-themed cosmetics, Scorn. I don't know why you do that in this game, but okay. Yeah. Cat Quest and Flintlock-themed cosmetics, so some stuff from other indie games. I say Scorn is maybe a little much for what you want in this kind of game, but
I mean the whole costume change. My Chia is dressed up, but you know you can also dress them up in more cultural garb and things like that. So I'm really enjoying the fact that you know you can go ahead and customize. Is there much of a reason to do it? No, but that's pretty much what.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for the Chia talk. Let's get to other news for this week. We have some more Game Pass stuff that I guess they're just announcing what's coming out next week here coming up. Maybe we'll get back to April as a thing, you know, sometime during this week, because all they have to announce that's on Game Pass is MLB The Show 23 launches this week. So that'll be on Game Pass again for that. Let's see. And the other one is on the 30th, Infinite Guitars. Which is an indie game. I forget if this is a rhythm RPG featuring vibrant anime-inspired art, adrenaline-fueled mech battles, and a blazing original soundtrack. So that could be cool to check out as well. But yeah, that's it on this update here. Other than just saying, like, yeah, Ghostwire Tokyo is April 12th. And there's some DLC, I guess, if you want that for some of the games. But yeah, there you go. That is a Game Pass. We got some other stuff here. If you like your Breath of the Wild, the Collector's Edition book, the Explorer's Edition, is available for free as a PDF, which you can grab right now. I don't know if how much of a thing that is, as far as if it's a limited time thing or something, but definitely worth checking out because there's a lot of cool art and information in there if you want to learn more about Breath of the Wild, and even has a little bit of Zelda history and how that plays into the game, as well as, you know, a bunch of information about the amiibos. So there's part ad in here as well, like what you can get out of that stuff. But if you maybe haven't necessarily looked too much into how a lot of the mechanics and all that work, this might be a good way to learn a bit more. If you want to jump back into that before Tears of the Kingdom comes out in May. And yeah, it's wild that that is like 2 months away and we still don't really know a ton about that game. But yeah, there you go. You can grab that and enjoy it here for the time being.
Yeah.
I've never actually gone through.
Yeah. Let's see. Sledge Life 2 got announced. So the devs of that made their first game free on Steam until March 30th. So Sledge Life is one of those weird, I don't know. It's a weird indie game. It's about like vandalism and all that. Where you're kind of just going around this town, just living, you know, the sludge life, I guess. So that's kind of a cool little thing there. Yeah, definitely worth checking out. It's been on Epic Game Store. It was free on there for quite a while. Like maybe a year or so after its launch. Believe you or not, check it out there. Now you can get it on Steam for free. It is verified on Steam Deck, so it should work perfectly fine there. But yeah, it's a game about, you know, being a little vandalism jerk and messing around with people and all that. So there you go. Is something you can check out as well. Also, the PS5 God of War Ragnarok bundle is on sale for the first time. Like, first time for any of these PS5 releases, but you can get it at various retailers for $50 off. So I think it's $509.99 until April 6th, which that basically means you get The PS5 disc version with God of War Ragnarok for $10 extra. That's a very good way to get that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was already a solid deal. Like
$550, $560, I think.
The game is...
Yeah. It seems like it's at pretty much anywhere you want to look at. PlayStation Direct, Walmart, Target, Best Buy, Amazon, and GameStop at the very least. So you got your options to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Let's see, we got some dates here for games that have been given them. Honkai Star Rail is launching April 26th, a month from now, for PC and mobile. It'll be coming to PS5 and PS4 at a later date. That is one of their games that they've been working on for a while. It's a space fantasy RPG that I guess is also turn-based.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if that means that it's a free-to-play game or paid game. I guess it's probably a free-to-play and with all the same kind of gacha mechanics for getting new characters that Genshin Impact has.
Mm-hmm.
So it has very much a similar kind of style.
Oh, yeah.
To Genshin Impact, so same kind of anime look to it, so
yeah,
that could be neat. We'll see how long that lasts until the audience ruins it, which is what has happened for Genshin Impact. So yeah, there you go. Honkai Star Rail out in April. Another game, or this isn't necessarily another game, but EA is delisting a few DICE games. They initially announced Battlefield 1943, Bad Company 1 and 2, and Mirror's Edge were going to be delisted from online storefronts as they shut down the servers for those games. To which people were like, wait, why the fuck is Mirror's Edge getting delisted, considering its online server aspect is for a leaderboard mode? That doesn't matter to what people like about that game. So that's they quickly, within a couple of hours, was an update being like, yeah, the Mirror's Edge thing was totally an error. So it's just like, no, you had a specific section about this game as you were talking about it. You just did not like that there was a huge outcry about this and decided not to delist it. You know, because it's got a whole big campaign that has zero online functionality to it in a way that, you know, will still be, you know, 95% playable without online connection in it. It'll just be that extra mode of leaderboard stuff, which is fine. But yeah, it's a shame they'll be shutting down these other games, because Battlefield 1943 was real, really big for a little bit there. But it was, you know, I think three or four maps at best. Very much the sort of accessible Battlefield experience that people wanted at that point on consoles. And Bad Company 1, I think, is a console exclusive, so there's no PC version to like rescue there. But 2 should probably just fine with probably fan-made servers on there. But yeah, that's Bad Company games are ones that Battlefield players definitely really liked, because they had a good mix of, you know, the Battlefield moments and the accessibility of having those, you know, controller accessible games, as well as the destructibility was an aspect that people really liked about those two Bad Company games. I think people still really have been asking for like a Bad Company 3. I think those are some of the only campaigns that have been in Battlefield games that people liked. That weren't just a throwaway thing so they could play the multiplayer some more. April 28th they will be delisted, and then the online services will be shut down December 8th. So yeah, you can still play the campaigns on Bad Company 1 and 2. The Mirror's Edge campaign is still going to be playable as well, but yeah, there you go. Good reason to replay those games if you haven't. But yeah, let's see. This was a bit of a surprise announcement. LEGO 2K Drive, a 2K published LEGO game. It is focused on this open world racing game thing with, I have to say, the dumbest name I could expect out of this. Because it's a game where it seems like they were way more concerned about branding than making a name that people could say without being, you know, smacked in the face with the stupid name. LEGO 2K Drive. But yeah, that'll be out May 19th. And it seems very much they are taking a lot of inspiration from the Forza Horizon games. Though with the LEGO aspect of it, you get to kind of build your own vehicles and sort of put them together, you know, in ways that are, you know, make them look cool or just make them look stupid. Be pure, you know, performance based versus, you know, looking like a real vehicle. Though I'm sure they're going to have plenty of pre-built stuff for you to enjoy. But yeah, they've already announced like all the special editions, which is, you know, the standard edition. There's like two others that are higher up, up to like $100 or so. But yeah, seems neat, but I'm tired of seeing Forza Horizon clones. I'd like to see racing games that are doing something different.
Not really my cup of tea. Hopefully it's fun. I don't know.
But yeah, that's neat looking, but not one I'm excited to jump into. Especially, I think it's the week before Tears of the Kingdom. And that'll be on everything. So there you go. But let's see. Yeah, coming May 23rd after us. This is technically a 2K game as well, but it's a Private Division published title from Piccolo Studio. I think it was just shown off at a state of play or something like that a few months ago or something like that. So that is, let's see, play as Gaia, the spirit of life, and navigate stunning platforming environments in a abstract world to salvage the souls of extinct animals. Yeah, it's sort of a game about extinction of sorts, trying to save these creatures and such from extinction, I guess. Try to bring back life to the world.
Yep.
Essentially. So, looks really neat. It's going to be on the new consoles and PC on May 23rd for $30. So that'll be one to keep an eye out on. And let's see. A few days later, The Lord of the Rings Golem has a new release date. May 25th. We'll see if it hits this one. It was supposed to be releasing 2 years ago. Then was delayed to 2022, and we're like, well, that has to be the time. And then they delayed it again to, they delayed it from May to September last year, and then they delayed it to 2023, and now it has a new date. All the PlayStations, Xboxes, and PC, May 25th. The Switch version will be later on. They put out a new trailer of story stuff, I guess. It's still a game that could be pretty neat, but also I don't know why we need a Golem game. But yeah, there you go for that.
I think this goes as far back as like probably being one of the first next gen. The fact that we're on like, you know, going on years or whatever.
Yeah. Let's see what's up here next. C-Smash VRS, the Cosmic Smash spiritual successor for PlayStation VR 2. Has gotten a release date of June 23rd and has a demo out now, so people can check it out. It seems like it's going to be one of those games that works pretty well in VR, as it's, you know, very kind of a cyberspacey kind of tennis game of sorts. Maybe a little bit like a, you know, Pong with a tennis paddle kind of thing to it. It has like a really cool style to it. So I'll have to check out this demo and see what the full game's going to be. I believe the demo's just going to be solo stuff, but it'll have multiplayer in the full game. Yeah, they've got music from people that worked on Res Infinite and that kind of stuff. So that seems like it's going to fit it pretty well. as they say here, see Smash VRS is a new form, Synestasia. So that is the vibe that that team really likes to do, or the style game really likes to focus on. So yeah, there you go for that. And also happening that same day, Sonic Origins Plus is releasing. Yes. They decided to take that last Sonic collection that was generally pretty good, but had some issues and some things missing from it that people would have liked, especially the way they were, you know, nickel and diming people on DLC to add extra features to it. And the way that, you know, if you didn't want to pay extra for the, you know, deluxe edition, you're going to have to pay individually for stuff. So this will be a new release for $40. If you have the original Sonic Origins, you can pay $10 to upgrade to this. So it's not, that's not too bad of an upgrade price. It'll include all the DLC from the original game and all the bonus stuff there, as well as the Plus expansion pack, which features 12 Sonic Game Gear titles. I didn't know there were that many. It'll also include the ability to play as Amy in Sonic the Hedgehog 1, 2, Sonic 3, and Knuckles in Sonic CD, as well as Knuckles being playable in Sonic CD. So that's cool. The 12 Game Gear titles are Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, Sonic Blast, Sonic Chaos, Sonic Drift 1 and 2, Sonic Labyrinth, Sonic Spinball, Sonic the Hedgehog 1 and 2, and Sonic the Hedgehog Triple Trouble, and Tails Adventure and Tails Sky Patrol. I have no idea what even half of those games could be, besides just being more Sonic.
I thought I was a big Sonic fan, but I don't know what a lot of these games are.
Yeah, it includes all the previous DLC, which includes Extreme Missions, Mirror Mode, additional letterbox backgrounds, new character animations and menus, and additional music from other Sonic titles, and more. It was like an art book that came with the deluxe edition, and the physical, or the, the physical edition includes an art book and a reversible cover sheet. So that's cool, but now it seems like it's a pretty decent time to grab this Sonic collection, or wait for it to go on sale even then, and then get it at some point. Because now that essentially includes all the DLC from the previous thing, as well as new stuff, that'll be a pretty decent way to get deep into some Sonic games, especially stuff that probably a lot of people didn't know existed. Seems like Game Gear was basically the Sonic system.
Pretty much.
But yeah, that's it for our dates. We do have some other stuff here. Venba, the neat little cooking game that was based on Indian culture, that, with an Indian family that immigrated to Canada and are trying to remember and make dishes that, you know, from their family and the culture. Set in the 80s, this game is coming out to more platforms. It was previously announced just to Switch and PC, but now it's coming to PS5 and Xbox Series X and S and Xbox One. And instead of being released in the spring that I guess they were planning on, it'll be out sometime this summer. And I guess it'll also be on Game Pass as well at launch. So yeah, that'll be an interesting game for people to check out. Let's have more of these games that are about, you know, cultures we rarely ever see in games.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm looking forward to. Glad we're hearing more about it.
Yeah, so that'll be cool. Whenever we get an actual date for that, that'll be fun to see. Yeah, we got some PC stuff that got announced, particularly this one here, Wrestle Story, a wrestling turn-based RPG. It's only announced for Steam right now, but looks pretty cool from all the screenshots and the trailer they put out. This is the developer that has done some neat stuff, TikTok Games. They made Rift of the Necrodancer that came out a little while ago. That is a spin-off of the Dance of the Necrodancer games. I think that's what the title is, but it's a rhythm, a more of a rhythm music game. mm-hmm. versus like a dungeon crawler kind of game.
Yeah.
They've done some other stuff as well that is pretty neat. So mm-hmm. That's one that's fun to check out.
It's mm. worth mentioning that this is separate from the game WrestleQuest, which is also a wrestling-based tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one to keep an eye out on. I don't think they have any sort of date or anything. I think it's just, it'll be done when it's done.
Yep.
But the battle system does look kind of Paper Mario-esque
mm-hmm.
in terms of the way you attack and counter with extra button presses to time it and do combos and that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
that looks neat. This other game got announced, Pizza Possum, that is looking pretty fun mm-hmm. As you're playing a possum that is just causing havoc, trying to get a bunch of food.
Yep.
With these dogs that are sort of patrolling, so it's kind of a bit of a stealth game
mm-hmm.
Around. So you're trying to sneak and steal a bunch of pizza and other food and mm-hmm. get away with it. But if dogs see you, you can kind of run away from them and run into bushes or the little possum hidey hole that they have. Mm-hmm. That is sort of your spawn point if you get caught by enemies.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So you're just kind of causing chaos, stealing all the food, and you can play this with co-op with some buddies, at least maybe one more buddy. So that one's coming to everything, I think. Yeah, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC.
Mm.
So the new consoles, Switch and PC. So that'll be out sometime this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's one to check out. And this other one was a bit of a surprise, announced by Paramount. Yeah, somebody at Paramount was talking to Polygon, Doug Rosen, Senior Vice President for Games and Emerging Media at Paramount Global, mm-hmm. revealed that there's a new TMNT game coming that mm-hmm. is based on the Last Ronin miniseries of comics
mm-hmm.
that kind of happened during the early on in the pandemic.
Yep.
That is set in the future where only one of the turtles is remaining. And their, struggle and all that, dealing with that, trying to get revenge for their brothers. And even the few stories I've seen about this mentions this and refuse to spoil who that is, because I guess that's a big point in there. So that gives you a chance to go read the series. I think it's only 5 or 6 issues, something pretty mm-hmm. quick. Should be able to get through it pretty quickly. But that's going to turn into a game. I guess people are saying it's going to be similar to like a God of War style thing,
mm-hmm.
Which is definitely a big change of pace for the way Turtles games typically work.
Mm-hmm.
Because you typically have them being very bright and cheery, co-op, party-based, action and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So having something that's a bit more maybe open worldish and moody and that kind of stuff mm-hmm. Would be kind of neat to see.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no date, no developer announced yet.
Nope.
So it's probably a few years off.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool to see somebody finally doing something cool with this, because I think there were rumors that Rocksteady was maybe working on a TMNT game
mm-hmm.
at a certain point, but that obviously went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this sounds like a really cool thing.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a different kind of TMNT game. We're used to it, just a bunch of beat 'em ups. Looking forward to this one being a little bit more and more involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see, our next story here, Atari. They're doing stuff. They acquired a studio, Night Dive Studios. Mm-hmm. Who is infamous for doing a lot of remakes and remasters of classic games.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently working on System Shock, that they've been working on that for a few years now. But they've done, they've published more than 100 games so far in those types of games, remakes and remasters of such. Mm-hmm. And Atari seems to like that, so they've acquired them.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly to work on bigger budget remakes of some of their classic properties, especially in the wake of them last week announcing that they acquired 12 classic retro game IPs from, who was it? I think it's from one of the other old gaming companies. I forget who. A lot of stuff like Berserk and Frenzy and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That level of game. So, yeah, Atari seems to be getting more into legit gaming stuff versus, you know, crypto that I think they still have a branch that's still doing some stuff like that, but this seems to be them making some smarter moves to stay in the gaming business than the way that they've been for the last 10, 15 years, where they've kind of just floated around as different entities that pop up here and there to be like, ah, we're back. And no, we're not. All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they only acquired them for about $10 million, so not even like a big acquisition there. So that seems like a pretty smart deal for this kind of developer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go. And, yeah, we got two more stories here. Arcane Redfall is out in about a month or so, May 2nd, I think it is. One of the big issues people have had with that game is when it was revealed that it would require an always online internet connection.
Yep.
Especially even for the single player campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That people were definitely not happy about.
Mm-hmm.
And so in response, Arcane has said that they are looking into it. Harvey Smith has explained that they are listening to players and have a lot of empathy for folks who don't have consistent internet connections.
Mm-hmm.
They have started work to address this in the future. I'm assuming it's not going to be ready for launch, maybe later this year, who knows. But that's at least good news for the people that like these sort of games that can stay in working condition without having to have servers online all the time for the rest of its life.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that's a whole thing. I think it was there so that they could make it easier to jump into games with other people, but mm-hmm. you know, there are those people that just want to play it solo, don't want to have to worry about any sort of co-op stuff, so it makes sense as something they would look at working on and make sure that happens at some point, hopefully. Hopefully it's not just something they work on and then realize like, we can't do this without fucking up everything else and just cancel it. But we'll have to see if they follow through on that plan. But yeah, then there's Ubisoft. Has like the worst story here, even though I don't think it's necessarily a bad story. They've announced that they are using AI to help write dialogue for like the first I think they've said the first draft of NPC barks. So like the little one-off phrases or whatever they say when you walk by. They're like the most throwaway things to have in there in all these games. So that seems like a perfect kind of use for this, is like have AI just generate stuff and then you have somebody come along just like, no, we gotta, you know, ready to be grammatically correct or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. But I assume this is like single line kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That in reality, we should have options, just turn it off.
Because
nobody really cares about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the thing people have been making fun of for whatever reason. It's like, this is kind of the perfect use for it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus using it to like write, you know, your dialogue for the entire game.
Mm-hmm. Which, like,
AI typically does pretty bad on that stuff, especially if you're trying to build around factual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
AI loves to just make stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what it's designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Kind of even a surprise they haven't been using this stuff for a while now, but they haven't been releasing many games either.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why. Mm-hmm. But hopefully this just doesn't lead to them paying less people to write things in their games.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, like, it's crazy how AI has taken off lately. I mean, I just watched the South Park episode last night about ChatGPT writing people's essays and returning people's texts. And, yeah, it's scary stuff.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that makes the most sense for it versus games that try to use that for generating, you know, art and textures and even, you know, more story stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because what was it? I think CNET had articles that were written by AI mm-hmm. that people figured this out because they started, you know, actually reading them and noticing like all the errors and issues with them that they had to come mm-hmm. back and be like, yeah, we're going to have to rethink this whole thing. Because, you know, you can certainly do that to have less people on staff to work on things like this, but, you know, AI is not very good at, you know, writing cohesive articles mm-hmm. and dialogue or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. That's like the worst news of the week.
Yep, pretty much.
So that means it's been a pretty good week then.
Mm.
If it's just some dumb AI thing that people are getting worked up about. But yeah, there you go. That's going to do it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and new things to talk about as we reach April somehow mm-hmm. and start to get closer to a, you know, our next wave of big games coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's not much news. I'll write down a big list of what's all coming out for the mm-hmm. next couple of months.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a bunch of stuff out there that I have a hard time pinning down what exactly is all coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Here and there, so that'll be a fun little thing to do. So yeah, thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out. And if mm-hmm. you enjoy the show, for free to let select strangers that hopefully aren't all in on AI.
Yeah.
And don't let AI, you know, dictate everything they say in life. I don't know, there's probably somebody that does that.
Or they are AI, in which case, you know, turn around and run very fast.
Yeah, short circuit their power source and mm-hmm. destroy them. But yeah, we'll be back next week with a new slate of news. And yeah, we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.